time for some questions towards the end. And I'm trust that what I have to say may raise one or two questions in your mind. I hope that one of the questions isn't, what on earth were you saying, because we couldn't understand your accent. But originally I'm from Lancashire and always prided myself in being from the north. Until you come to Scotland and they say that not only are you a southerner, but you don't even belong in the country. So I feel somewhat intimidated being on the wrong side of the border, though I must confess I enjoy thoroughly working here in Scotland and have done for many, many years. Based on Tyneside, I live there with my wife now for 25 years or so since leaving Bible College, which I suppose I ought to say is the new the International Christian College. But of course, that is now so far removed from the Lebanon Missionary Bible College that I attended so many years ago that I hardly recognize it. But there are my roots, and it was at that college that I actually came in touch with open air campaigners, as we were known then and still are known internationally, though in this country we now tend to work under the name of OAC Ministries because our work is diversified. But our thrust has been and always will be presenting Christ by all means everywhere. And essentially to those people who are outside of the church. And those are the 91%, the 91% who never go to church and are never, ever likely to attend a church meeting. That's an awful lot of people. But those are the people that I'm particularly concerned about. And as regards the Lord's command, it is perfectly clear. We know the verse all too well. Can I just emphasize the first word of that? And that is the word go. The need to go into all the world. And my chairman reminded us of that, the importance of that, to go out to where the people are, to fish in the place where the fishes are, to get out into the harvest field. And that's always been my heart. That's always been what I've desired to do more than anything else. I'm never happier than when I'm amongst a bunch of non-Christians and able to be sharing the good news of Jesus with them. What I would love to do, but we can't do it. Maybe we could have done, but logistically it would have been difficult. Would instead of being here now doing this, would maybe have been to have gone outside on that thronging street and to have done it there. I remember a story being told of, the guy that used to carry the cross, the American, carry the cross all around the country. Arthur Blessed, I think it was at a big conference on evangelism in London, and he got bored to tears partway through this conference. Actually went out onto the street, into a cafe across the road, and just opened the door and said, "Is there anybody in here who wants to get saved?" And the little old lady sort of looked up and he sort of fastened himself onto her, led her to Christ, took her back across the road, and said, "While she'd been talking about it, I've been doing it," okay? So it would be great if we could go outside, but we're not able to do that. So as we're in here, for a moment or two, just be unsaved, okay? Just be out on your street. And here's this odd bloke with his paintbrushes and his board, stood in the middle of the pedestrian precinct, and like most people, you wonder, well, what on earth is he doing? As I walked up the street yesterday, there's a guy there with bits of metal, and he was making little metal objects, doubtless for sale. And he had quite a crowd around him. And for a short while, I was one of that crowd. Curiosity always seems to get the better of one. So let me tell you a story. A familiar story to many. Maybe you'll, as I move on, you'll perhaps be able to identify exactly the story to which I'm referring. But actually it describes somebody who was not too dissimilar to most of you. What do I mean by that? Well, watch very closely on the board, and I'll draw some white letters in blue paint. And if you look very closely at the board right now, you'll see that some little letters will begin to appear. Can you read that one? The word most. And this particular young person that I've got in mind, I suppose the best way that I could describe him was that he had most things in life that people look for. He belonged to in a nice part of the world. He lived out in the country. It was pleasant. He had a good family. He got brothers. It was a good life. He got all kinds of exciting prospects in the future to go on into the family business. He was secure. But he had one bad habit. I wonder if you can tell me what the bad habit was just by looking at the board there. Bit of a gambler. Okay. And actually, it's interesting, they got that quicker in Scotland than most of the places. But anyway, a bit of a gambler. And one day he decided that he would gamble. And it wasn't just on, you know, sort of a few bob on the GGs down at the local race course. What he actually decided to gamble was just about everything that he had. His house, his home, his family, his securities. He thought, I'm going to blow the lot and I'm going to live. I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to enjoy myself. Ever felt like doing that? Ever felt like walking into work on a Monday morning and saying to the boss, this is what you can do with your job? You know, the number of people like me to sort of dream of winning the lottery, to be able to go in and to get rid of the job, to be able to sort of say to the kind of folks they've hated all these years exactly what they think, and to fly off somewhere nice and hot and comfortable and to spend the rest of their days happy ever after. Don't think it quite works out like that, but nonetheless, that's a dream that many, many people harbour. And this was a dream that was in the heart of this particular young man. He just wanted to enjoy life. He was bored with the farm. He was bored with the family. He was bored with the rural scene. He wanted to enjoy himself. So off he went. And the bright lights of the city were what attracted him most. Only things didn't quite work out as he intended. And without wanting to elongate the story to those who were saved, it wasn't too long at all before he found that all that he had was lost and that he had absolutely nothing. You know, I probably find it right now in this particular crowd of people here. But on the outside, you look like you've got everything. But on the inside, you've got nothing. On the outside, your face is smiling. On the inside, your heart's breaking. Is that the way some of you feel this afternoon? You stand here. You know, nobody would know, but you know. And tonight, when you lie in your bed and you put your head on your pillow, what are the thoughts going around in your mind? And this young man, he had nothing. And you know, when things got so bad for him that he began to look for work. Not something he probably had to do a great deal of for some time. And it was on a local husbandry farm. You know what one of those is? It's where they keep these characters. It was on a local pig farm that he found a job feeding the pigs. You know, many was the time he would have eaten the food that the pigs were eating. Things were so desperate. And when you get like that, you start to ask yourselves questions. And the question that he began to ask more than anything else was perhaps this one. Where in the world can I find just something? Something to make life make sense. Something to give me the answers that I'm so desperately looking for. Something to give me that dream. The more he thought, the more he realized that maybe home wasn't such a bad place after all. But the thought of going back home and admitting what a mess he'd made of his life just filled him with all kinds of dread. He thought, if I go home now, I can imagine the look on my dad's face. There'll probably be steam coming out of his ears. Doubtless I'll get a right good thrashing for having wasted all of my inheritance. The last place he wanted to go was back home. You know, it's hard to eat humble pie, isn't it? It's hard to admit that we're wrong. It's hard to have held certain ideas for so long only to discover that actually what we thought we believed wasn't actually the truth. You know, it's going to be a sobering moment for many people when they realize that so much of what you're living for actually doesn't give you what you really thought it would. And there's so many disappointed people around. I know many rich people. They thought the answer was in their riches. And they've got it, they've made it, but they're desperately unhappy. Not many famous people in show business, one or two famous sportsmen, and they thought that if they could just reach the top of their profession, they'd be happy. But they're still searching, they're still seeking. And in the end, this young man decided to do what he knew deep down he would have to do at some point. He went back home, only to find that his father, far from being miserable, was delighted to see him, threw his arms around him, gave him a bath, Well, you would after spending all that time with the pigs. Clean him up, put a new clothes on him, through a celebration. You see, the lad that was lost was found. He was back home where he belonged. He didn't just give him something. And he'd have been more than pleased just to have worked as one of his father's servants. But Dad would have nothing of it. He actually gave to him everything he'd ever dreamed of. He found it right back where he began, at home. Why am I telling you this story? Quite simply this. Do you realize you've got a heavenly Father who wants you back home? A Father who loves you. A Father who cares for you. A Father who has plans for you. A Father who cared so much that he actually sent his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, into this world. Whoa, and it's one of the management as well with his mobile. Sent his Son into this world that he might give his life for you and for me. And I'll not develop this any further here. I would spend quite a bit of time probably there now developing the whole story of the cross. But you know, even as he's dying on the cross, significant that the cross is stood on the dice, because there were Roman soldiers. You know what they were doing? They were throwing dice. They were gambling for his clothes. Some more gamblers. Tragic, isn't it? The irony. Here is Christ, the Son of God, the creator of the universe, hanging there in their place, dying for their sin so that they could be made right with God and enjoy the favor and the love of God for all eternity. And all they're interested in is his clothes. Is that going to be like you in a moment from now? When I finish, you'll walk away and say, well, that was interesting. Now, what are we going to have for tea, love? Fancy an ice cream? Let's bob into the shop and we'll have a coffee. Insignificant things in the light of a God who loves you and a Savior who died for you and rose again that you might have that eternal life, that life everlasting. Is that what you seek this afternoon? Then as I close this part of my meeting and I'm around for a little while longer, and I'll be starting again in another 20 minutes time or so, but if you like to talk and have a chat about what it really means to know God personally and to have that assurance of forgiveness and eternity, come and have a chat. Okay, that's just a little sort of brief taster of the kind of thing that I might do when I actually go out into, not just the open air, but into all kinds of other places. Don't hold me up on any theology on this. That was a bit of a rush job and missed out, obviously, the deeper parts that you would have appreciated. Going is exciting. Going is exciting. You know, when we actually get out of our churches and we get out amongst, I don't say real people, but you know what I mean by that. Ordinary people, unsaved people, unchurched people. There's a thrill and an excitement about that because you're never, ever quite sure what's going to happen. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was down in Canterbury and I went out with one or two of our men working in that area. And we went into the centre of Canterbury just after lunch and we had the sketchboard up and I did my bit of paint work at the beginning. And as I turned around, there was about five or six young people and a group of older people. And it was the young people who immediately sort of engaged me. And one of them straight away asked a question, what are you doing? I said, well, if you watch very closely, you'll see exactly what I'm going to do. At which point, about another 30 of their colleagues joined. So now I've got about sort of 30, 40 teenagers and a whole bunch of adults. And as I'm beginning to actually talk, I'm aware that there's one of the adults is actually interpreting for the young people who, it turns out, were on a day trip from France. So now I've got a congregation of about 40 teenagers from France, plus the local adults. So I said to the teacher, I said, excuse me, I said, can you just interpret rather more loudly, then they can all hear? And she said, well, actually, she said, it might cost you for that. I said, I'll give you a quick kiss afterwards, but if you can just interpret, that'll be great. So she laughed, I laughed, all the children laughed, and for the next 15 minutes, she interpreted my message as I preached the gospel. No, I don't know. France is one of the most needy places in the world. What's the chances of those young people ever hearing the gospel again? But they heard it that afternoon. And we're able to chat with some of the teachers that took literature afterwards, though they would not allow us to give literature to the children because they might have got in trouble when they got back with their parents. But the staff took literature and we conversed with them. You never know what's going to happen. It's always exciting. It's exciting because you don't know what's going to happen. It's exciting because of the change that can happen in people's lives. You know, we actually go out and we see people responding to Christ and all that it would happen more frequently in this country. You know, I've done some work overseas. I've worked in Kenya and Zambia. I was over in Brazil last year. Evangelist paradise. People hungry for God. No worries about people turning up for the meeting. Just put a sketchboard like this up in any market square and speak to a crowd of 200 or 300 every time. And the response is wonderful. But that's not Britain. It is more difficult. But you know, when God moves and God works and people's lives are changed, there's nothing more thrilling or more exciting. I was saying to the folks yesterday, it's great to be a granddad. And I'm a granddad in more than one way. I am a granddad. I've got two lovely grandchildren, Megan and Hannah. They're sweet. I get great pleasure from them. But I think of a camp that I'll be on in the summer. And the leaders of that camp, I remember that I led one of their children to Christ 2 years ago. The thrilling thing was that I'd led their parents to Christ a number of many years before that at the same camp. To be a granddad like that, I say, it's God that does it all. And many of the ones that I think that maybe I did something, maybe nothing happened, and the ones you'll never know about, but God knows, he's touched their lives. We understand that. But there's nothing more wonderful than seeing God working in people's lives and having had that first contact in a chance encounter, perhaps, in a school, in an open-air meeting, on a camp, on a housing estate. Going is exciting. It's also exciting just for the sheer possibilities. I was talking with one of our brothers who's doing the seminar to Asian neighbours over lunch. And he was just mentioning the multiplication thing. And I had a little illustration of my own here, which you've probably come across. But a few years ago, the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago had a fascinating display. It showed a checkerboard with one grain of wheat on the first square, two on the second, four on the third, and eights. And then, of course, there were too many grains to put on the square. And so it asked the question, how many grains of wheat when you get to the last square? And the answer was 9 sextillion. Now, I know straight away you understand exactly what that is. So let me put it in language you do understand. That's enough seed to cover the whole subcontinent of India 50 feet deep in seed. Just on one checkerboard. Phenomenal. And my brother was sharing over lunchtime, what's the birth rate in this country at this present time? It's not that high. If we could just lead, as churches, one or two each to Christ each year, we'd not just redress the balance, we'd be growing at a rate we've never experienced ever before. It's not a massive thing we're looking for. We're not looking for big crusades. We're just looking to mobilize the army that we have in an effective way, getting them out where they can do some damage and just letting them loose with their testimonies on the lives of ordinary individuals. It's thoroughly exciting. You'll gather that. I love the job. It's good for you. You know, I'm, apart from the fact that I work as an evangelist, we've also planted a church in Tyneside where I live. So I'm part of a leadership team there and know all of the responsibilities of some of the pastoral care, at least. Certainly a lot of the problems that arise within local churches. And the time you feel like you're banging your head against a brick wall when you're trying to get people to read the word, get people to spend time in prayer, get people to open themselves up to God, get people to give of their time and their efforts and their energies. You know what? There's nothing like getting them out into evangelism to suddenly, for them to want to get back into the word, for them to suddenly want to get into prayer, for them to suddenly want to open themselves to all that the Holy Spirit has to offer them. Because they suddenly realize the context in which they can be effective and the need for these things, not just to fill their heads with knowledge, but because all of a sudden people are asking the kind of questions that they need to have answers to, and it drives them back on God in a way that nothing else can. And furthermore, it unites them. So instead of fighting and niggling with each other, they're united in fighting the real enemy. So evangelism is good for us. Going is good for us. Going is personal. Please don't assume that because I'm talking about maybe going out and proclaiming and touching all kinds of our society, that I'm not concerned about that one-to-one encounter. All good evangelism must conclude with a one-to-one encounter. And I can think of time and time again when that has happened, in all kinds of places, where you've stood before a whole crowd of people, and gradually out of that crowd, a number respond. And out of that number that respond, I end up talking to one. And that's where often a lot of the real work is done. Going is personal as well. And going is not just an option. It's not an option at all. It's something that we need to be involved in. And so we can reach people in all kinds of situations. We can reach them in our homes. Not going to spend too long on this because it overlaps, I think, perhaps with the one on congregational evangelism, where one of the points, at least that I'm aware of, was the need to maybe reach our fringes in our churches. Those people that are around, but they're not Christians yet. They're not part of the family yet. And the home is a great place to reach people outside of our churches. The home's got a friendly face to it. It's a place where people can feel relaxed and comfortable. And so to open our homes, open house times. Think of when we were planting the church in Killingworth. So much of the early growth occurred in people's homes. Just inviting the friends and the neighbours in. Nothing too heavy, nothing over spiritual. Just an opportunity to get to know people, out of which came the opportunities to converse. The coffee mornings that took place, ladies inviting their friends around, people they met at the school. I was in a church on Sunday just down in Morpeth, Anglican church, and talking to a group of men there who've just, over the last few months, begun a Sunday evening meeting called Wine Plus. Now, I'm not making a statement whether I believe that it's right for them to drink wine at a particular meeting, but that's what they've done. It was hatched as they drank a glass of wine together and thought, how can we reach our other friends? And they thought, well, let's do with them what we're doing right now. Relax and just share some friendship. And out of that has spawned a Sunday night meeting now that meets once a month, and each month that is now, well, the first few months, it's almost doubled in size each time. It's just growing as they're reaching out to their friends and their colleagues at work. Barbecues, we've done all these kinds of things. Study groups, and of course by that we mean things like perhaps like Alpha, just looking. But this is our immediate fringe. One of the words that really came through to me yesterday through one of the main ministries was the fact that we needed to move out with courage and with confidence. And so I wanted to sort of say, look, let's moving courage beyond our comfort zones, and let's move out into that wider world that needs to hear. Relational evangelism will reach us so far, but our fringes are shrinking, and by and large our churches are shrinking. I say by and large, I think that is still generally the trend nationwide. Our churches are still shrinking. So we must break beyond our fringes and push out into our communities. So yeah, we can reach people in our homes, but we can do it on the streets also. And I could have produced all kinds of pictures. I could have shown you one or two of the open air meetings out in overseas and massive crowds. I thought, no, that one's in Glasgow. I'm not quite sure any locals might tell me exactly where in Glasgow that one is. The gentleman that's there with the sketchboard is a guy called Roger Gray, and Roger is our OSC worker here in Glasgow. And I don't know, I just quickly counted up on that little picture there, 24 people. Maybe half a dozen of those are Christians who went out with him. So let's knock that down to 18 people who just gathered standing around. Then you might sort of say, well, small crowd. When did you last get 18 unchurched, unsafe people into your church on a Sunday night or a Sunday morning? And that was just one meeting. He probably had three or four in that particular session. Opportunities just to reach people in an effective way. They didn't stop because, you know, I mean, most people open their preaching these days just walk by. These people stopped of their own accord because there was something happening that was attractive, that gripped them, that held them as the message was preached. Down below is Steve Gurnett, one of our latest evangelists working in London. Steve, a high-ranking police officer, just really felt God calling to evangelism, has left a good job. So I think he's only about sort of 7 or 8 years from his pension, an early retirement. But he just stepped out totally in faith, just felt that God calling him. And his main burden is just to preach on the streets of London. On the streets. And it's not difficult. It's not difficult. And I do want to impress this. You are pastors, and I am an evangelist. So the sense in which that we are different. But in your church, there will be people, I'm quite convinced about this, who will have the gift of an evangelist. Some will be at a more personal level. Some will be at a more upfront level. But there will be people there that God can and will call. The thing is, sometimes they need to be led out and encouraged, which means that perhaps sometimes we've got to break out of our comfort zones, pick up new skills in order that we might encourage them. But on the streets is one particular avenue. In the schools, I don't know how many of you are involved in schools work. I do a lot of schools work. I enjoy it thoroughly. This is Rob Davis in a school down in Bristol. He's there with a small puppet team who you can't see because they're behind the black screen. Pray for Rob. Right now he's in hospital, just had serious cancer operation, and his voice is at risk, and it looks like he's going to come through. Pray for Rob that God will still use him. Just a young man, a young family. But there's Rob in his schools. But what do you do when you're in front of 400 teenagers in probably for them the most boring slot of the day, and they've just wheeled on the local vicar? Because that's what they call us all, even evangelists. I still get called the Reverend D. Glover. And some they assume it's the guy from the church. What do I do in a situation like that? Well, maybe something like this. Hey, just have a look at what I've got in my hands here. Can you see it clearly enough? It's got an arrow on there. Which way is the arrow pointing? That way. Which way is that way? The right. Okay. And actually on the other side, there's another arrow. And that's pointing to the... Right, okay. I'll tell you what, I'm aware that... Can I just borrow this chair? I'm aware that one or two of the folks at the back can't possibly see, so I'll stand up here and make it easier for you. So the arrow goes to the right, okay? And you know, there is a right way to go. There's a right way to go, there's a right way to live. Deep down inside, you know that. Because you know when people are doing things you think are not right. So there is a right way to go, a right way to live. You know, yeah, I believe that the right way... For me, it's God's way. It's the Bible way. It's the way that Jesus taught, the way that Jesus lived. But you know, when, as soon as I mention that, some people say, I don't want to go that way. I don't want to go that way. I want to go the other way. I want to go my way. And they do. So instead of going God's way, they go their way. Instead of going the right way, they go the wrong way. Instead of going the Bible way, they go the other way. But then, of course, there are those people who say, well, can't we do both? Can't we go God's way on Sundays and my way on Mondays? Can't we go God's way on Christmas days, Easter days, holy days, and my way the rest of the time? You know, the Bible states clearly you can't. Jesus said, if you're going to choose to go your way and you're not going to go my way, then what happens then is you end up going your own way all the time. Because you can only go one way or the other. You can't go both. And the trouble with going the wrong way is you end up where? Well, wrong place. And no one wants to end up in the wrong place. You see, because there is a wrong place and there's a right place. The trouble is nobody likes to talk about the wrong place, because we don't. It's sort of like, you know, taboo. You talk about down there, the other place, you know, the place where it's a bit warm down, you know, that sort of terminology. Nobody likes to use the word, dare I use it, hell. There we go. Nobody likes to talk about that, but heaven, everybody likes to talk about heaven. Everybody likes deep down to think that they're going to go to heaven. I've never yet met anybody who didn't want to go to heaven, but nobody wants to go to hell, so we don't talk about that. But Jesus did. He talked a lot about hell. In fact, he talked more about hell than he did about heaven. And the truth was that if you go the wrong way, he said, you'll end up in the wrong place. If you go the right way, you'll end up in the right place. But you'll only get to the right place if you go the right way. And the right way is God's way. It's the Bible way. It's the way that Jesus lived and the way that Jesus taught. And deep down inside, we know that. The fact is, we're not going that way. And as a Christian here this morning, I want to sort of say that I believe it's time we changed direction. And we got back on track. And began to think about what really is right and what really is wrong. And begin to ask the question, maybe Jesus has something to share with us and say to us in these days. Of course, whether you will is entirely up to you. But thanks for listening. That is so simple. But then they're all so simple. It's just trying to look at ways that will grab people's attention. I'll come to that perhaps more in a moment or two. But in the schools, and you know what? I've been in schools. Amazing things happen. I was in a school a little while back, middle school. and concluded the assembly, did a sketchboard message talking about Jesus being the great physician was the topic I'd been given. So I spoke on that and shared through that and the cross and various other things. As I was talking to the head teacher afterwards, all the children were filing out. A little girl came, her name was Sophie. I could see her there now. Tears rolling down her cheeks. And I looked at her and looked at the head teacher and I said, excuse me. And she said, David, will you pray for me? And the whole family was breaking up and the little girl's heart was broken. And I said, yes, I will pray for you, Sophie. And I prayed for her there and then. And I went back to that school regularly. I was able to sort of make further contact and just sort of quick sort of smile at her every time I went back into that school. And the head was delighted and thrilled because she was aware of the problems and delighted that she could just get some of that out of the system there. You get all kinds of lovely comeback when you try to present the message in a different kind of a way. I got these letters on Monday, just before I set off, from a school I was in a place called Bedlington, Bebside Middle, near Blythe, just a couple of weeks ago. Dear Mr. Glover, before you came, I did not believe in God, but now I'm not sure. I think your tricks and illusions were really good, especially the one where you can see Jesus. I really like your puppet. I think it's really good the way to explain stuff because it's more exciting, and I love the way it spoke. It was really funny. I think your talk was really good and hope you'll come again. That was really nice. And another one here, thank you for coming to Red 7 and talking about God. You made everyone in the class think about God and his existence. And the illusions and tricks were also really good. And you made everyone laugh and made RE more interesting. Still haven't made my mind up about it, if I believe in him. But you've changed some other people's minds in the class. So that was great. And then just to sort of say, there's always one that makes you humble again. So I'll share it just to keep me humble. Dear Mr. Glover, thank you for coming and talking to us about God. You made me think about the existence of God. I now realize that it's impossible for God to exist. So there we go. So you can't win them all, but there we go. In the parks. Can I just tell you sort of, before I flick onto that, just keeping back to schools for a second. I organise in our own locality with our other local ministers, Ecumenical Minister, Church of England Minister, a lady from the Methodist Church, and the local URC lady. I organise a rota. There's one of us in every single one of our local schools every single week addressing the youngsters. Which means, in my mind, that every single person that grows up in our community will hear on a regular basis something of the gospel of Jesus. And at a time when our Sunday schools are empty, that isn't such a bad thing. And I feel that, you know, schools ministry is one of the things we really need to be prioritizing as we go out to the ones who are not hearing the message, particularly amongst young people. And on this same theme, in the parks, talking to one of the ladies over lunch, and she was recalling when she was in Bradford, how they used to have children's meetings on the back lanes between the back-to-back terraced houses. And you'd have one meeting in one place, then move about five streets further along and have another meeting with another bunch of youngsters. In our own estate of Killingworth, we have grassed areas between some of the more modern housing. So we have meetings on those places. You can go into local parks and recreation areas all over the country, unannounced, unpublicised, inexpensive, and just set up on a nice day and present the gospel to youngsters. Always well to be aware these days that people are a bit suspicious, particularly with anybody who's working with youngsters. Maybe good to have one or two team members, folks from your church, a couple of the older ladies who perhaps don't feel as confident in other things, just to knock on a few doors and say, just in case you're wondering who it is with your children, we're from the church, we're putting on a little presentation for them, they're going to have a wonderful time, finish in half an hour. That just puts people's minds at rest. We can get on and share the good news. Kevin Skilling's there and Dawn Clancy working in Nottingham with boys and girls. Summer fairs and festivals. It's quite amusing, actually. I met a couple of people this morning, actually sat right here in our seminar now. But that was actually with them down in Wooler, over the last few years at the Glendale Show. It's a regular feature in that rural area. And it was great that the local churches got together under Brian's leadership and just put on something in that place as a contribution to the whole event, but also as an opportunity for the gospel. And so there's a little sort of cafeteria area and an opportunity for us to present the gospel throughout the day, sketchboards, puppets, balloon modelling, all kinds of things. But it was an opportunity and one that we thoroughly enjoyed. Don Clancy here, down the New Age festivals down in the West Country. A big feature down there in the summer. All kinds of weird characters, but all seeking a spirituality. And so they have their marquee set up there and they do storytelling, things with illusions and face painting and all kinds of stuff going on. And these people just come into this situation and hear the gospel. So there's all kinds of opportunities in these kinds of places too. Homes for the elderly. John Haywood there, one of our guys down in Stourbridge, West Midlands. And John, he's just such a lovely guy, got a gentle spirit. He's not one of your sort of upfront, powerful evangelist types. Put him amongst a situation like this. And he just loves working with these kinds of people. He's a great guy. You'll notice he's got his guitar and his mouth organ and all the rest of it. That's right, and his microphone, you're right. But he's also works on the canals in that area. They tell me there's more canals in Birmingham than in Venice. And I think that's true, actually. And he works down there on the canal barges, singing the old canal songs, and then leads into sort of Christian songs and shares his testimony in the gospel. Just seizing an opportunity that is there, one that God's shown him in that particular area. And then, of course, there are all the other places. We've got workers, think of our worker down in Falmouth. There's a great work on the ships there. Many of our men work in prisons. But then there are churches who've got a prison in the locality who can have an outreach into that, getting alongside some of these needy characters. Never forget the time I took my wife and one or two others from our church into prison down near York, Full Sutton Prison. First time my wife had been into a prison. And she's not a speaker type. She just loves to be in the background. She loves the family and she's involved in the church. She was terrified. You know, she sat and talked to one prisoner that night and she came home, she prayed for that guy and it was just great, you know. God just did something in her. I'm sure it did something in him as well. You know, it can really build and encourage people. People who never thought they had a gift. As we take them out, take a risk. Take courage. The gifts begin to come out and they discover there are things they can do. Think of the little group I've been bringing down each day from our hosts in Torrance. And there was a group of them. Three of them came on the OSC training seminar, which is in Motherwell in July, which I'll give you some leaflets afterwards. And they came there last year. And one of them, Dorothy. Lovely girl, Dorothy. And she was terrified at the prospect of having to stand up and actually do a sermon with a sketchboard. But you know, whenever we went out in the open air, where was Dorothy? She was always sat on some form, some wall, with one or two people around her, just sharing her faith. She just had an infectious way of just getting alongside people and talking about Jesus. Amazing gift. I wish I had that, but she has it. And it was coming out during the course of that week ever so effectively. So it's a great opportunity to take people with us. Involvement with the local community. Actually, these two pictures are both taken in my local community centre, the White Swan Centre. It's brand new. It's not been open too long, a couple of years now. They were desperately looking for things to happen to make the centre live. So I came along and said, we'd like to do something. What would you like to do? I said, well, we'd like to actually take the whole centre over for a week, really, and put on all kinds of displays and things, and we'll pay for it. Well, their faces really lit up then, because this was most unusual, the church offering to pay for something. And so we did, and we got our local sort of nurseries to come in, and they built this beautiful Easter garden with a tomb, with displays, sharing people's testimonies, big photographs, people's testimonies, how Easter changed my life. All the local schools got involved with displays around the Easter theme, the art club, the photographic club within the centre. Non-Christian organisations, I went and spoke to them and said, look, we're doing this Easter theme. Can you bring me images of new life that we can display all around the centre? Boy, and they all got involved. We put on afternoons for the older folks and the afternoon teas and a presentation at Easter, a community Easter service. The centre are reaching out of our hands. Can you do the same at Christmas? Could you do a harvest one? Can you come in and do, it's a wide open door for us. endless opportunity to share the gospel. Not in the least bit offended by what we present, because the way we presented it has been so attractive. All kinds of things. Just seizing the opportunity. I'm impressed by that, you know, Acts 5:42. Day after day in the temple courts and from house to house, they never stopped teaching and proclaiming the good news that Jesus is the Christ. They never stopped doing that. They were involved all the time in that going out and getting out and about and amongst people. And I'm not even touched upon radio, television. Heard some lovely testimonies just last week of somebody just saved through the internet in a chat room. And there are certain churches really developing this kind of a ministry. There are people who will open up in a way in chat rooms, in internets, on the internet. They will not open up in other ways. And I believe particularly men. There's an open door there. And we need people with the creativity and the imagination to get into that. And maybe people are just determined to adopt the new skills, learn the new skills that will equip them to be able to do that. But let me just sort of bring things to a close here by saying what we say will not put people off half as much as the way that we say it. That's important. You know, very often in the past, it's not what we've said that's been the problem. It's been the way that we've said it. The gospel, yeah, it can be an offense to many. But I found that if we present it attractively, that people are more than willing to listen and to absorb and to respond. And therefore, can I just say that we do need to make the message live. Use of pictures. There's a ministry which I'll recommend to you if you've not come across it already. Decade Ministries. They produce a whole range of great materials, and they're churning new stuff out all the time. They came and shared at our staff conference last year. Brilliant. So many good ideas. Do get the address off here if you wish. The email address, I think, is just Decade Ministries. Just can't set my eyes upon it. Come and collect, have a look at that afterwards and get the actual details. Lots and lots of resources, sketchboards, visual aids, drama, and all these visual things. You know, people only 70% of all that we know we learn through what we hear. Only 17%. 75% we learn through what we see. And yet still we persist on just being a voice communicators, when we need to be visual communicators and learning new skills to help us to do that. Object lessons, and you'll have noticed that I'm particularly keen on those unusual ones that I'll just call illusions, that just seem to be very effective in certain situations. There's a fellowship of Christian magicians. No, I'll never get invited back. But just guys who love to, and ladies who love to share the gospel through those sort of visual arts. Very, very effective. And if you'd like information about that, I can let you have that. One Way UK will tell you all about puppet ministries. And again, very effective. I know churches where whole groups of young people have suddenly found a ministry by standing anonymously behind black curtains and using puppets. You know, and they feel confident there because as trendy teenagers, they don't want to be seen with their heads above the curtain too much. But they'll put a puppet there and they'll present the gospel. We can, you know, people can find and develop new skills who perhaps aren't the upfront sort of preachers. Music and song and dance in certain situations too. Think of some of these sort of street ministries and the festivals, the country fairs. Dance can be a great means of drawing a crowd and providing an opportunity to present the gospel in those situations too. Something that's meant a lot to me over the years and is this particular verse, I become all things to all men, that by all means I might save some. That, in a sense, is one of my key verses in the scripture. All things to all men, that by all means I might save some. I need to say to you, I'm not the least bit interested in conjuring tricks. Not the least bit interested in puppets. If I never touched a paintbrush again in my life, it wouldn't concern me one bit. The only reason I do any of these things, I've learned to use any of these things, It's because deep down I've got a heart to communicate the gospel. And if I've got to do those things to get people to stop and listen, then I will do it. I don't believe that in any way it undermines the power of the gospel. Certainly it is no replacement for the work of the Holy Spirit. But it's just a means of getting people to stop and listen and take notice, and so that message will remain with them because a visual impression has been made upon them that will continue to work in their minds over the months and the years that follow. That's all I've got to say. It's exactly 45 minutes, which in itself is an achievement and deserves a round of applause. I'm going to hand back to my chairman, but just before I do, I do need to say two things. First of all, I am told that all the people who are sat on the back three or four rows, if you could take your chairs when you do go in about 10 minutes time into the food hall next door, then that would be great. That will help the stewards. And I'll also get some literature out of my bag, which I will stick on this table here. So there'll be some leaflets there about the OSC work. There'll be some seminar leaflets. If you've got folks you feel may benefit from going to a week-long seminar, learning to use visual ideas and communication in Motherwell in July, I'll put some leaflets there. Pick up whatever you can use.